even for those people who start in Minhagim of Avelis of Sfira from Rosh Chodesh and not from the second day Pesach, are finished already on Friday morning already. You can take a haircut and shave, and it's the beginning of Shloshes Yemei Hagbola Friday morning. Even those who start after Rosh Chodesh, really is, there's no minig like that. Nobody has a minig that start after Rosh Chodesh. They usually then go to Erev Shavuos, but this year I couldn't find specifically, but probably the halacha is the same thing as when Lag BaOmer falls on Sunday, that you're allowed already to take a haircut to cover Shabbos. Even for those people, probably you're allowed to take a haircut already on Friday, no matter what. So for everybody, you can take a haircut Friday, except for the people, what? Except for the people who don't take a haircut the whole 49 days, not out of Avelis, but out of Kabbalah, because of the Arizal, which I don't do with Avelis. So then there's no heter even in Erev Shabbos, and the heter's only Erev Shavuos. Also, there's another interesting Indian. Usually you're not allowed to cut your fingernails and toenails on the same day. It's not not a good thing to do. It's not a din. It's a din. It's a minig not to do it. It's not a good thing to do. But Erev Shavuos is the exception. Erev Shavuos, you're allowed to cut your fingernails and toenails the same. Whatever the reason is, you can't do it any other time. Doesn't apply Erev Shavuos. Right? The sakon is not there. So you're allowed to cut your fingernails. So you've been waiting all year to cut your fingernails and toenails on the same day. Erev Shavuos is not good. Okay, another interesting thing about Shavuos is that a historical note that according to one medrash at least, Hevel, Cain and Hevel, when Cain killed Hevel was on Shavuos, was on Vav Sivan, and there's a hint to it, Bachodesh HaShlishi Litzeis is the Rosh Tevos of Hevel, just not in order. Okay. Shavuos does not have any special halachas except in the Beis HaMikdash that apply to it. The only special halachas that apply to Shavuos are the korbanos that were brought on Shavuos, the Shtei Alechem and the korbanos Musaf, and two loaves of chametz bread, which is they weren't brought on the Mizbeach, but they were brought together with a korban that was brought on the Mizbeach. And that's one of the exceptions that when you bring chametz as conjunction with a korban, normally korbanos, you only brought matzah with it. But the korban tolda, you bring chametz, and shavuos, you bring chametz. And the idea being that Pesach, where we just got our freedom, but we didn't have the Torah yet, there we have to only have Yetzirah Tov. You have to start out with everything just perfect. You can't be involved with the Yetzirah Hara because you have freedom, but you don't have Torah. And then we prepare for the Torah, and finally on Shavuos, you can have what's called Chametz too. Because the Barasi Yetzirah Hara, Barasi Torah Tav, and the Torah has the ability to spice up the Yetzirah Hara and make it directed towards the good. Halachically, what the Omer did on Pesach for Chodesh, for the new grain, to be able to be eaten from the Omer on, is what the Shtei Alechem does for the new grain to be able to be brought on the Mizbeach. That's the halachic significance of it. Also, the time of bringing Bikurim starts from Shavuos. But that's not really a halach in Shavuos, it just happens to be that that's a time of year, right, that's called Zman Simcha, and the time when fruits are ripe, that you could start bringing the first fruits. Not a halacha in Shavuos per se, but it's related to Shavuos. So Shavuos has no halachas that Torah halachas, like Sukkot has a Sukkot and Lulav, and Rosh Hashanah has a shofar, and Pesach has matzah. None of those halachas apply to Shavuos. And Shavuos is basically minhagim. There are no halachas pertaining to Shavuos. There are many minhagim. And the different Eidos have different minhagim. We're going to speak about the minhagim of the Ashkenazim. Sfaradim have different minhagim and don't have some of the minhagim we're going to mention. And one of the ideas is, behind that, is that minhagim are what promote and protect the Torah. The purpose of a minig is to give a personal flavor to a mitzvah, which makes it safely observed, because people relate to things that that are ethnically close to them. So minhagim have the ability of strengthening mitzvahs and making them something that people will want to do more. And also minhagim protect people from averas. Right? There are minhagim that were created in order to safeguard people from doing various averas. So minhagim are, I always like to say, the word minig is the same letters as hamogain, the shield. Minhagim shield the mitzvahs. So on Shavuos, right, there are no mitzvahs, but there are minhagim, because that's what shields the mitzvahs. That's what shields the entire Torah. The Torah is called Musar Avicha, and minhagim are called, Torah Simecha, the Torah of Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael can create Torah, that's through minhagim. There are minhagim, however, that are not proper and that should be abolished. However, the Sfarim say that before you abolish any minig, right, we're talking now about an authority that has the ability to abolish minhagim, you have to check very carefully to make sure that there isn't some very good reason for it, even though it seems to be a minig that may be negative. Right? A good example of that is the Ramah, when he came to Krakow, saw that the Gabbai was going every morning over to different men and wishing them mazel tov. So he asked him, what's the mazel tov? He says, the minig here is, my wife is the mikveh lady, and whenever a woman goes to the mikveh the night before, the Gabbai, his wife, tells him that that woman went to the mikveh, and he should go the next day to the husband and give him a mazel tov. So the Ramah said, I never saw such a crazy minig in my life. This is not sandua, right? And I wanted it abolished immediately. And then after looking into it, he found out that there was a very good reason why they established this minig, that the mikveh was run down, dilapidated, and many women, and it was also cold, and many women were not going to the mikveh, but they were ashamed to tell their husbands they didn't go to the mikveh, so they told their husbands they did go to the mikveh. And in that way, they made a minig that the gabbai, right, who was the husband of the mikveh lady, he would tell the husband the next day a mazel tov if his wife went to the mikveh. So if she didn't go to the mikveh and she told her husband she went to the mikveh and he didn't get a mazel tov the next day, he knew that she was lying, and this would intimidate the women to not pretend they went to the mikveh and actually go, because they knew that the next day the husband would find out one way or the other. So because of the circumstances, it was an important thing to do, even though on the surface it looked like a crazy thing. And even minhagim that seemed to be without any purpose to them, are important to keep, especially if they have no negative side to them. Maisa that Rav Gifter Zatzal tell over with the Kovna Rav, or Gitzel Chanan, that a very wealthy man invited him to attend his daughter's chasen, the Masada Kedushin, and the minig in Kovna was that all of the chuppahs were held in the courtyard of the shul. That was the minig. And the rich man said, I have too many guests, and I have a beautiful estate, and I'm not making the chuppah in the courtyard of the shul. That minig was probably made for poor people who didn't have any place to make a chuppah, so they make it in the courtyard of the shul. I have a better place to make it. So Yisrael Hanan told him, I wish you a mazel tov, but I won't be able to attend the chasen. He says, I don't go against minhagim. So the man said, yeah, but this minig obviously doesn't have any real reason to it. So he said, I'll tell you, the Medrash says that minhagim are compared to nuts, round nuts. You have a heap of nuts, and you start to tamper with one of them, they all fall down. So too minhag Yisrael, if you start tampering with any of them, even the ones that don't seem to be so important, you're threatening all of them. So Rav Yisrael Kahneman said, why is it compared to nuts? Any round thing, apples, oranges, would have the same marshal. Right, if you take one away in a heap, they'll all fall down. Why dafka nuts? He said, because nuts, sometimes you open up a nut, there's nothing inside. It's just a shell. But even if you move that nut, all the other ones fall down. Same thing with minhagim. There are minhagim that maybe have no tochen. There's nothing to them. But if you start tampering with them without just cause, you're going to end up tampering with all of them. So therefore, Shavuos has a lot of minhagim, and the Torah is called, the Vilna Gaon says, the Torah is called Reishis, and the minhagim of Shavuos spell the word Acharis. Acharis means, doesn't really necessarily mean the end. The Torah is called the Reishis, the beginning, right, the foundation. Acharis can also mean the hope, the Acharis hope, right? A good ending means that there's hope in the end. If you want the Torah to last, the Reishis, to have an Acharis, you have to have minhagim. And the minhagim of Shavuos spell the word Acharis. And they are, again, according to Minig Ashkenaz, it's brought down in the Gemara and the Ramah, one is Akdamos, okay, that we say before Kriyas HaTorah. We'll see that there are various minhagim. The Ches is Cholav, we eat milchiks, partially at least. The Reish is Rus. The Yud is Yerek, we bring greenery into the shul, into the house. And the Tav is Tikkun Lel Shavuos. Those are the minhagim, the minig Ashkenaz, that spell Acharis, according to the Gur. Okay, so now we're going to go through these minhagim and they give a few ideas behind each one. Okay, the first one that we'll discuss is the one of Yerek, bringing greenery into the house. Okay, some say that the origin of this minig was to bring fruit trees into the house. And as a zecher to the fact that on Shavuos we're judged for fruit of the tree. Fruit is being harvested during that time, and that's when the judgment on fruit is taking place. And you want to bring the trees into the house to remember that. The Vilna Gaon says that that minig no longer exists, because bringing trees into the house became a hallmark of the Christians, right, Christmas time. And therefore, even a minig that started out to be one that was okay, if it becomes something that becomes a hallmark for Avodah Zarah, then the minig is bottled. We find even in the Torah that a mitzvah, a matzeva, right, that was once something that the Rabban Shalom wanted. But when the Goyim took it over and made it something specifically for Avodah Zarah, then the Torah was mevatel that inyan, it's also to have a matzeva. You have to have a mizbeach. Mizbeach is many stones built into an altar, and a matzeva is one stone. So surely in minhagim, right, something that was a minig, but the Goyim made it a hallmark of, it's not just staff, but if in Goyish, in Christian countries at least, right, where it's clear that if you see somebody bringing a tree into his house, right, you know that it's a Goyish custom, so the minig became a bottle. So nobody does that. The minig became bottle, and there's a bottle everywhere.
So when the yarmulkes.
When you see somebody yarmulke, you don't say, hey, there's a priest, right? You say there's a yid. But if you look, see a cardinal with a yarmulke, right, you say, hey, looks just like a Jew. Right? It's not just the opposite. There, it's the hallmark of Yidden, and for whatever reason, the Goyim copied it, but it didn't become something that people associate with Goyim. Right, they associate more with you.
How is that going to be able to
No, it's not talking about you had to cut down the whole tree. They brought branches in or whatever. And anyway, a lot of cut. They were going to burn the tree, whatever. They brought branches and put the whole tree in the house. Right? They brought down branches of the trees.
Right.
It looks like a tree, right? No, they bring a whole branch, right? It looks like a tree. They bring a branch, it looks like a tree. I'm not talking about just bringing a little fruit in. One, you know, bring a whole big branch of fruit in the tree. Looks like a tree. Okay. It's also to cut down fruit trees anywhere, even if it's large, somewhere. The Ramah says that the minig has nothing to do with the din on fruit trees. It has to do with the zecher to Har Sinai. That Har Sinai was a desolate mountain, and it sprouted vegetation. It became green for Matan Torah. So as a zecher to that nace, that's what we do. The Magen Avraham says. The Magen Avraham says what the Gur comments on. The Ramah says, according to this, there's no Indian to bring back the trees or anything, flowers, anything that's green. Greenery would be the same thing. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says that it's an inyan of simchas yontif, and you should not bring in aromatic things, because you want to have an extra simcha of yontif of having sweet-smelling, aromatic flowers, spices around. Lechara, then that's replied every yontif, you should do it, not simchas yontif. But it could be that Shavuos is more of an inyan of simchas yontif than any other yontif. Because the Gemara says, even according to the man, the Omer who holds that you could be yotze simchas yontif with spiritual simcha, and Shavuos it has to be physical. Because the Torah applies to the physical world, right? And the Simcha HaTorah demands that you enjoy it physically also. So it could be therefore you have to enjoy it with all your senses, including the sense of smell. Mashenkin other Yomim told him that special halacha doesn't apply, so there this special halacha of enjoying Yontif with a good smell also doesn't apply. The Al-Sheikh says that it's a zecher to the Dudoyim that Reuven brought to his mother, these mandrakes, some kind of fertility drug, that Reuven brought to Leah, and it was Erev Shavuos, and in place of these mandrakes, she gave it to her sister Rachel, right? She wanted this fertility drug, she didn't have any children, and even though Leah stopped having children, she wanted more, she gave them up, and because of that, Yaakov lived with her that night, which was Leah Shavuos, and she became pregnant with Yisachar, who is the epitome of Limud HaTorah in Klal Yisrael. He was conceived on Shavuos. Others say that the reason you bring flowers in is because Kishoshana Ben HaChochin, we're compared to a lily or a rose amongst the thorns. And that specifically is referring to the time when all the nations of the world didn't accept the Torah, and we did. So we were the flower that stood out amongst the weeds and the thorns, so that's a zecher to that. Another idea is that when the Torah was given, not only did they see what they heard, but they also smelled it. Every dibur had a different aroma. And every time the Rosh Hashanah said something, a new aroma filled up the world, and they smelled that dibra. So it was all their senses were involved in Aseret HaDibros, including the sense of smell. The Malbim, I think, says that it's a different zecher, that it's a zecher to the fact that 80 years before Matan Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu was put into the bulrushes on the side of the Nile, right, that day, okay? In fact, the Medrashim say that the Malachim said the person who's going to receive the Torah, what's it called, 80 years from now, should he drown, should he be killed, or whatever. He was born on Zion Adar. His mother hid him for 3 months. If you figure out, the 3 months ended on Vav Sivan. And Vav Sivan is what's it called when he was put into the Suf, and therefore we bring in grasses into the house to remember that. So according to all these different reasons, right, except for the one with the trees, if you bring in sweet-smelling flowers, they have some aroma to them, you yotze lechora all these different minhagim. Okay, the next minig. Any questions on this minig about bringing flowers into the house, into the shul, or whatever? Okay, next minig. The minig of milk. Okay, the Ramah says that this is similar to what we do on Pesach, where we bring two different cooked things on the Seder plate. We have the minhag of bringing a zroah and a beitzah, and that reminds us of two korbanos, the chagiga and the korban pesach. On Shavuos there also was the shtei alechem, a special korban. We said these two loaves of bread. So we want to have a zecher to that special korban. So how do you have a zecher to two loaves of bread? So we bring two loaves of bread to the table. No, but that anyway you bring shtei alechem. You bring the lechem mishnah on a yontif. So that wouldn't be a zecher to the korban. So somehow you have to have an extra loaf of bread that you wouldn't have needed, and that way it was a hint to these two loaves. So therefore the minhag became to start the meal with milchiks. And the halacha is that bread that was on the table with milchiks you can't use for pleishiks unless you were extra careful to keep it away from everything or whatever. But under normal circumstances, the bread that's on the table with milchiks or vice versa can't be used with the opposite. So you start with milchiks, and you wash, make kiddush, wash, make a motzi, and then you, in the middle of the meal, switch to pleishiks, and now you have to bring another loaf of bread to be able to eat with the fleishiks. So when you bring the next loaf of bread, it's a simon to the shtei lechem. That's how the Rambam says. And most people do not do this minig bizman hazeh. For various reasons, there are problems with eating fleishiks after milchiks in the same meal. We hold normally, some people hold you have to wait a half an hour between milk or soft cheese and fleishiks. Some people hold that you don't have to wait at all, but you have to bench in between, or eat the brach achrona on what you ate, and wash your hands and wash your mouth out, meaning eat something abrasive, right, and rinse your mouth out so you don't have the taste of the milk in your mouth anymore. But it can't be done mamish within the same meal with the same brachas. And the minig was to, in the same meal, you didn't bench after the first one, because then it's not shtei lechem, it was a new meal. So it has to be bringing a new loaf of bread within the same meal to do this thing. So there are shilas whether that's okay. Some people hold even during the year, you have a minig to wait a half an hour and not to eat immediately. You're allowed on shavuos to be meikel because of this minig. But most people don't have this minig altogether. What is something similar to this minig, right, is, and there's other reasons for having milchiks besides this inyan of the shtei halechem, is to have, and there's another problem with having milchiks, right, as a full meal of milchiks. According to the Ramah, the minig never was to have a full meal of milchiks, just have an entree of milchiks. Because yontif, you need a fleishik meal. Simchas yontif is basar v'yayin, right, meat and wine. Right? And even though some shittas hold that was only in the time of the Beis HaMikdash and the meat was shlamim, but there are many shittas that hold this man hazeh, you have to eat meat. And preferably meat from an animal, not from a bird. Right? Not just chicken, if you can afford it. So it's an inyan to have real meat on a yontif, at least partially. Right? Even if you have to buy a salami, that's basar bakar, to have the inyan of meat is kedai. But, so therefore, to eat a meal of total milchiks, unless you don't like meat, and you like milchiks better, then even on Shabbos you can eat milchiks if you don't like meat. But if you like meat, right, then meat is a much more chashuv a meal, and it's also a meal of simcha, so which doesn't apply to milchiks. So, therefore, preferably, if you don't, again, if you just prefer having milchiks because you like a change, that's not good enough. You like meat, and you can eat four meals if you have 2 days off. If you have to eat two meals, right, of meat meals, then you have to eat meat meals. And again, if you have a minig that you eat milchiks, one of the meals, I'm not going to start up with minhagim. But if you don't have a specific minig in your family like that, then the halacha of eating meat is a chashuva halacha. So therefore, there's a problem also of eating total milchiks. So therefore, there is a minig that many people have is to eat breakfast milchiks, and then to later on, since people are up all night, so they come home, they eat a small milchik meal, but their main meal is later on, and that's a fleishik meal. And then the yotze, they had some milchiks, right, and then they had fleishiks, even though it's not exactly what the Ramah says. Another hint to this idea of a connection between milchiks and the shtei alechem is in the words mincha chadosha l'ashem b'shavuo seichem. It speaks about this mincha chadosha, that you bring a mincha from the new grain, and that permits you then to bring the new grain on the mizbeah. The words mincha chadosha l'ashem b'shavuo seichem spell out mechalot from milk. Again, a hint to this minik. Another idea, why milk? The Malbim says also goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Nothing to do with the Shavuos, right? It has to do with the fact that the day that Moshe Rabbeinu was saved from the Nile, so they brought his mother to nurse him. He wouldn't nurse from the Egyptians. So as a remembrance of that, what's it called, Nais, we drink milk. Another idea is that the Torah is compared to milk. Dvash v'cholov tachat l'shomech. Torah is compared to milk because it's something that's the lifeblood of a person, just like milk is the way you start off life. So Torah also, the beginning of the Torah, Matan Torah, one of our life cycle is Eden, so the Torah is compared to milk. Another idea is a medrash that says that the Torah is like milk insofar that a baby, when it drinks milk in the beginning of its life, every drop of milk tastes different. in order they should keep up an interest, and that got discussed at a mill. So Torah also, every time you hear a Torah, every year, you know, same shavuos again, we heard this before, whatever, this has a new time to it. It's always something new. By the Greens formula, the Mestama, you can have a formula on shavuos. Plenty of other reasons are also. What? Doesn't he get bored of it? The Mestama, the Rosh Hashanah, does the same nace, and whatever, if he drinks cow's milk and that, mother's milk. Don't you remember? So that's what the Medrash said. That's a teva of a child. Right? Because otherwise, the child would drink the same thing over and over, get bored of it, right? So he wouldn't. So the same teva is by fish in water. Another idea is that the 365 negative commandments, the lavim of the Torah, correspond to the 365 days of the year. I don't know how that works out 100% because we don't have a 365 day calendar. Right, and by the time 365 days come, it's a new year already. But somehow it works out, right? And if you count the days of the year, right, from Pesach till Shavuos, the 66th day of the year is Shavuos. The 66th lav in the Torah is Lo Sevashel Gedi B'Chalei Dimo. Don't cook milk and meat together. And the way that you're mekayim that is by eating milk and eating meat and not keep cooking them together. Or not. So if you just eat meat and you don't eat milk at all, so you're not mekayim that issur, you're just avoiding it. But if you have the opportunity to cook them together and you don't, so then you're fulfilling that lav. Then you get schar for not doing the lav. So we put ourselves in a situation where you have milchiks and fleishiks in close proximity, and you don't cook them, and then that's the connection to Shavuos. Another idea is it reminds us of a Medrash. The Medrash says that when Avraham Avinu, when the Moshe Rabbeinu came up to the heavens, so the Malachim didn't want him to get the Torah. And one Medrash says that the Ribbono Shel Olam changed Moshe Rabbeinu's facial features that he appeared like Avraham Avinu. And the Ribbono Shel Olam said to the Malachim, aren't you ashamed of this man? What are you trying to deter him from getting the Torah? Aren't you ashamed of him, from him? Right? You ate Basar B'Cholam in his house. Right? And you want the Torah? So as a remembrance that one of the reasons we got the Torah and the Malachim didn't prevent us from getting it is because the Ribbono Shel Olam used this Basar B'Cholam ploy, right? So we eat milchiks and fleishiks in close proximity to remember that inyan. Okay, the only problem is that if the Malachim weren't fit for the Torah because they ate Basar B'Cholam, then Avraham Avinu was the one who made, did something wrong. Right? He gave them the Basar B'Cholam to begin with. So what do they say? Well, he gave them milk before meat. That's okay. You're allowed to eat milk before meat. So I once wanted to say, somebody told me, I think Rav Chaim Kanievsky says it, that a human being is allowed to eat milk before meat. Okay? With waiting, with benching, whatever it may be. Okay? Because all the reasons that apply, not eating milk after meat, right, either it sticks between your teeth or the digestion, doesn't apply to soft milkings. But Malachim, they don't eat. They burn the food within them. That's how Rashi describes how a Malach gets rid of the food. He's not eating, not digesting, he's burning it. So it doesn't make a difference by the Malach if he gets the milk before the meat or the milk before the milk. He's over in Bishul Basar B'Cholam. He's cooking milk and meat by his eating. Right? So it wasn't a Shaila of eating Basar B'Cholam cooked together. He was, the Shaila was cooking Basar B'Cholam. So the Malachim was awesome. But for Avraham Avinu, it was fine. He didn't know they were Malachim. He gave human beings milk before meat, right? They ate it. It burns each one, right? So they cooked it within themselves. So they were over the Isser, not him. Others say that what's it called? That milk is a simon of the power of Torah. Because for a few reasons. One is that if it would not be for the Torah, you wouldn't be allowed to drink milk. Because milk is Eivor Menachat. It comes from a living animal. You're not allowed to take things from a living animal and eat them. It's only because the Torah is called Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Zavas, Cholav U'Davash, that we know that milk and honey, which comes from bees also, which the Torah should be also too, is mutter. So Torah wouldn't describe Eretz Yisrael, you know, and saying, well, it's as good as pig's feet or whatever. Right? Some also, you don't mishabeach Eretz Yisrael. So it must be there, it's mutter. Also, milk is made from blood. Where does the milk come from? The cow's blood, or the woman's blood, right, turns into milk. Dam nekar v'nasecholim. That's the process. Right? It's a process where in the glands that create the milk, blood is transformed into milk. Blood is aser, and milk is mutter. Blood is red, milk is white. Completely different things. That's the power of Torah has, to take things that are aser and turn them into something mutter also. Another thing they say is, why this minig of eating milchiks on Shavuos, because after being up all night, nobody wants to eat, you know, sausages in the morning, except Goyim. So, right, so you eat, except me, what's it called? That's a Goyish influence. But normally people don't like to eat fleishiks, unless you're a Goy, fleishiks early in the morning for breakfast. So people ate milchiks. That's what a minig became. They ate a milchik, a meal, right away in the morning, and then they had a fleishik, a meal later on. The Mishnah Berurah says another reason. He says that the day they were given the Torah was Shabbos. Okay? Till the Torah was given, they could eat anything. There was no halachas of kashrus. And once the Torah was given, they weren't allowed to eat only kosher meat. And they had a shecht, an animal, or whatever, and they couldn't do any shechit on Shabbos. So they couldn't have meat. All the meat they had before was treif. So the only meat they could possibly have was to wait till Motzei Shabbos and shecht an animal, right, and then make it kosher. So, therefore, they didn't have fleishiks, but milchiks they could have, right? Shabbos, there could have been milk was still okay from before Matan Torah, right? There's no, you know, of Chol HaAkum or anything like that. That was a gzeirah later on. They weren't akum either. So, besides the big shiloh fact, if a goy cooks something and then converts, is he allowed to eat what he cooked when he was a goy? And many shittas all he is allowed. Or if he used his kalim before he was Jewish, does he have to total them afterwards, since they were kalim that belonged to a goy, but now he's a Jew? Right. So there are opinions that that's okay. So in any case, so milk products that they had from before were definitely okay for them. That's all they could eat. That first shavuos was milchiks, so it's a zecher to that. Others say that there's an inyan bedafka to have a suda of cholov in addition to a suda of basar, like we're saying, exclusively. And that suda cholov is the breakfast that you have shavuos morning, is a siyum of the mitzvah sfiras ha'omer. According to this, the mitzvah in chutzlaris would be dafka the first day. And dafka, well, not dafka in daytime, it could be at night too. Right? But it's a siyum, it's a special suda as a siyum to what's called the sfiras ha'omer. Because it's any mitzvah that has a long duration, there's an inyan making a siyum at the end of the mitzvah. So it's a special mitzvah to celebrate that. Okay. Next. Yeah. 40, right, okay. Right. Right. There's a lot of other things here, but I want to finish the other ones. Okay. Anybody else have anything? That's another one. Cholov is 40. What else is Cholov? Okay. Tikkun Leil Shavuos. Tikkun Leil Shavuos is a sefer that has the beginning and end of every parsha in the Torah, the beginning and end of every sefer in Tanakh, the beginning and end of every mesechta of Mishnayos, and a list of all Taryag mitzvahs. And that's what you do all night. Say this whole sefer. And it could take all night, depends how many hours you have to do it. In some places there are a lot of hours, in some places there are very few hours. But, so some people read Tikkun Leil Shavuos. And it's basically an idea of going through a sample of the whole Torah, Torah Shebichtav, and Torah Shebaalpeh before you get the Torah. It's like a quick review course of everything before Matan Torah. That's what some people do. The main idea is to learn Leil Shavuos, the night before Matan Torah, and the Sfarim bring down, because the night that they the day they received the Torah early in the morning, that night Klal Yisrael went to sleep, and they had to be awoken in the morning by the Ribono Shel Olam, by Moshe Rabbeinu, who slept from Matan Torah. Okay, things haven't changed in a long time, and in order to correct that, so we stay up all night so we don't oversleep. Okay, as a cloud, people who can't stay up go to sleep. Maybe they'll oversleep too, but the cloud is up all night. Some say that they did nothing wrong. They did what they were supposed to. They didn't have a Torah yet. So how do you prepare for the Torah when you don't have a Torah? You get a good night's sleep, so you'll be awake for the next day. But once we have a Torah, then the preparation for Torah is not what would seem rational, get a good night's sleep. Then Torah needs a lot of effort. And just the opposite. Preparing for the Torah with the effort of Torah gives you more success than getting good night's sleep. Right? I think Gary once told me on the name of Rabbi Elzaz from B'nai Brak. He said that normally you would think, he didn't say exactly like that, but he said that that's their mistake. Their mistake was that you prepare for Torah by resting. When in fact, Torah doesn't have the same rules as everything else. Torah, the more effort you put in, right, that's how you prepare for Torah. Even though it would seem to be counterproductive. But just to change a little bit, that they didn't have a Torah yet. So for them, it was taka, the right thing to rest. They had nothing else to do that night. Right, in fact, I once wanted to say that the Shabbos, the last night that immediately got a good night's sleep. Right, because you have to learn Torah at night. So it's the last night in history, right, that people could get a good night's sleep. So they took advantage of it. They never Torah yet. What else was here about another thing that they thought they would get, that they thought that they would have Aliyas Neshama, that is another way of preparing for the Torah. But sometimes if you go to sleep, right, with Torah on your mind, then you get higher and higher levels of Torah when you're asleep that you couldn't get when you're awake. They said it on the gong, that they show safe, had Magidim to come to them when they were asleep, that revealed to them things in their sleep that they couldn't get when they were awake. But again, the main thing would have been to stay up in anticipation of Matan Torah. Famous Maisa that I think we say every year with the Vilna Gaon and the Dubna Magid. They were contemporaries and they were very close also. The Vilna Gaon used to call the Dubna Magid to give him Musar. So one Shavuos night they were together in the same base medrash. And the Vilna Gaon was learning Tikkun Leil Shavuos, the kind of minig. And the Dubna Magid was learning, like today in most Litvish yeshivas, they just learn. They don't read through the Tikkun Leil Shavuos. So the Vilna Gaon asked the Dubna Magid why he's not doing the minig of learning Tikkun Leil Shavuos, this sefer with all the samples of the Torah. So he gave the following marshal. He said there was once a man who had a son-in-law who was not good at anything. I said we say it every week, every year. Did anybody not hear this marshal? Yeah, okay. What's that for you? It's a Gnopio marshal. He said, in any case, he had a son-in-law who was couldn't, what you call, make a living in anything he tried. So he told the father-in-law told him, he said, look, I'm willing to give you money, put you into business. I find a business that you think you can do, that you enjoy, I'll payroll it. So the guy comes back, he says, I decided I want to go to the carpet business. I want to sell carpets. So he said, okay. He said, did you research how much it's going to cost, you know, to get into business? He says, yeah, I need $200. It's $200 to get into business? That's all you need? Well, that's a goal. Stock, everything, rent. He said, yeah. He said, that's great. That's going to cost me thousands of dollars. $200, I can, you know, fine. Here's the $200. He said, when you get settled, right, get set up in business, I want to be your first customer. So the guy goes out and he buys a stock or whatever and rents a place. He calls his father-in-law, you're my first customer. So he sees, he comes into the store and he sees all these swatches of carpet hanging in the window, right? All different kinds of carpet, different colors. And the father was impressed. So he looks through the samples and he picks out one. He says, okay, I'll take this one. He says, okay, that'll be $3.50. He wraps it up, puts it to a pad. He says, what are you talking about? He says, I want a carpet, right? That's like this. He said, well, I don't have any carpets. He said, I went to all the carpet stores. They all have these samples in their window. I find out how much they cost. I buy them for $1, some for $3.50. I'm going to be rich. Says, you idiot. This is not the way you run a carpet store. Like, these are just samples. You have to sell. You have to have carpets. Right? You have to buy stock. These are just the samples. He says, same thing, Vimilagon. He told Vimilagon. He says, if you have the merchandise, you know, in the stock room, then the samples make sense. But if all you have is samples, then you're an idiot. He said, you know Kola Torah Kula, so tonight you go through the samples, it's okay. I don't have the whole Torah in the stock room. Right? If I'm going to just go through the samples, it's as stupid as the story that we just heard. So he said, therefore, I'm going to learn. And you can learn the Tikkun Rus. Okay, Akdomus. Akdomus, there's also in Chutzlars, yeah?
And
this time to take them to the test. Recently we were for Kamatora. I mean, it's also a Shavuos Barbat.
What
was the Kamatora each year? Right? They were what we received and received. And what we learned, we did the full year. What's the Kamatora each year? Are you asking me a question, or are you saying the Pshat and Tikkun Rus? No,
I'm asking.
I was waiting for the punchline. The idea of Kabbalah Satora is a recommitment to Torah. It's not that you're getting something new, but you're renewing the Kabbalah they made them. What was Kabbalah Satorah? Nasa V'nishma. Right? That you're willing to accept upon yourself the Ol HaTorah, right? With Nasa V'nishma. So once a year, we re-accept that Ol. Right? It's a re-acceptance. Right? It's a, every year is a new thing to itself. Every year, you relive the Koach of Matan Torah. So every year you recharge that battery, right, of the Nasa V'nishma from year to year. That's the idea of Kabbalah Satorah. You're not getting anything new. You're renewing your commitment to what was what's a yearly recharge of the batteries. That's the most portion. In addition, every year there are different facets of Torah that are made known, and those things are makubal by Kabbalah Satorah every year. Right, every generation has different things that were left for it to discover in Torah. Every person has different aspects of Torah that were left for him, his chelik in Torah. And every year has its inyan of Torah that's specific to that year. Right? So every time you've lain over the parshios that year, specific to that year. And a lot of times there's a lot of connection between things that go on during the week and that specific parasha, whatever. So see, there's a new hisgalus of Torah year by year. New uncovering of aspects of Torah that are only are new for that year. They were meant for that year.
That's because
that's what you could. Makabel, all Malchus Shamayim, right, every day of the year too. We do a Pesach night, right, or Rosh Hashanah, right, because that's the time when it happened historically. That's the time when that Indian, it's not just that it's easier to do that. Since the opportunity is there because of what's in that historical day, there's a chiyuv to do it then. Right, it's not just that it's easier and therefore you could do it then. Whenever there's an opportunity and you don't seize it, so you're not being Makayim what you could do. Okay, Agdamos. And in Chutzlar, it's something we don't have here, there's also Yitziv Pisgam. Yitziv Pisgam is said the second day, like Agdamos, only by the Haftorah. Now, Agdamos, there were a few different minhagim. The original minig of Agdamos, and some places still do this, is that the Kohen gets an aliyah, he makes the brachas on the Torah, and instead of starting to lain, they say Akdamas. And then after they finish Akdamas, they start laning. Some people hold it's a hefsik between the bracha and the laning, so that's not good. Some places they make the bracha, lay in the first pasuk or the first three psukim, and then they say akdamas, and they continue laying. Our minig is that we say akdamas before the kohen says the bracha. He's called up, we say akdamas, and then he makes the bracha and they lay. So there's no hefsek between the bracha and the actual laying. Akdamas is a poem that was written by, I have it written down who it was. His name was Mayor. First, it starts out with the Aleph Beis, and he has his name. I think his name was Mayor or something. The whole Maisa with Akdamas, how it was written, the famous story. What? Mayor, no, but they know who he was, supposedly. So, there's a Maisa, I don't know how reliable the Maisa is, or where it's brought down 100%, right, with how he saved a city from a blood libel, and miraculously traveled hundreds of miles in a flash of an eye through the Aron Kodesh or whatever, but the famous Maisa, which I remember from a long time ago, I don't remember seeing it recently. In any case, but he wrote Akdamas as, it was one of the Malei Tosfos. Okay, he wrote Akdamas as a Hakdama, Akdamus Milin, which means the Hakdama, right? And a Rishus to Kriya Satorah, Yesara Satibros. And it basically speaks about the greatness of the Rabbanu Shalom, the greatness of the Torah, the greatness of Klal Yisrael, the fact that the Goyim want us to join them, and we tell them that we'd never give up the Torah and the Rabbanu Shalom for anything that they could possibly offer us, and then it speaks about what's going to be the tremendous reward for those who keep the Torah and Olam Haba. That's how it ends. And the second day, in Chutz Laaretz, they read Yitziv Pisgam, which is in Aramaic also, and it's a short, much shorter poem that has to do with Marav, over there is a Nebuah of Yecheskel, I think, second day. First day is Yeshaya. Yeah? Okay, whatever. I haven't done it in years, it's in Pisgah. It's interesting, the same niggun that we use on Shivasar Batamuz for She'ei Nesar in Slichas is the same niggun for Yitziv Pisgam on Shavuos. Okay, and the truth is that there's a connection because what we got on Shavuos was broken in us on Shavuos of the Talmud. But we don't do it anymore. We read also Megillas Rus on Shavuos. Many reasons. One is David HaMelech, who came from Rus, was born and died on Shavuos. In Chutz Laaretz, they read Megillas Rus on the second day. In Eretz Israel, obviously, we read it on the first day. David HaMelech couldn't have died on two different days. Either he died the first day or the second day. Right? So one of us is not reading it on the right date or whatever. So there's all different answers of how that works out. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu seemingly died on two different days. He died on Friday and on Shabbos. There's ways of explaining how it works out. He lost his neshama, the ikur of his neshama one day, but didn't die yet physically till the next day. Whatever. We say it the only day we have. Oh, you? Good question. We have no choice really. Well, you know that we do. We say it in the afternoon special. Mustama, you should do it if you have 2 days. Do like you do in Chutz Laaretz. And you should actually also eat this cup. No. Another reason is that Rus went through a lot of Yisurim, and the Torah is acquired with Yisurim. Rus was Makabal the Torah, that her name represents Kabbalah the Torah. Rus in Gematria is 606. Add that to that the 7 mitzvahs she originally had, you have 613 mitzvahs. She added an extra 606. Also, it happened during the harvest season between Pesach and Shavuos, so that's it speaks about the period of between Pesach and Shavuos. Also, Rus, basically, David HaMelech would not have been permitted to marry a regular Jewess Right? He could never have been a king because Ru Samoavia, right, would have been also to marry if it wasn't for Torah Shabbat Peh. So the fact that David HaMelech was allowed to be part of Klal Yisrael, right, was not possible. Is because of Torah Shabbat Peh, because the oral Torah that tells me that Moavi v'lo Moavia. Another idea I was thinking of is that Ru speaks about a time of Shvot HaShoftim. People judge their leaders. They were too critical of the leaders, and if you don't follow leaders, even if they're not perfect, then what it leads to is intermarriage, and worse. Right? That's what happened with the Machlan and Kilyan. So when you don't have any authority because you're too critical of authority, merely you don't accept any authority because you're too critical, so then when there's no authority, there's anarchy. Okay, that's pretty much the reasons they're given for loose. Any questions? Those that finishes all of the Minhagim of Shavuos. Yeah. Yeah, there's no issur to cut trees except to harvest things normally, so we're not harvesting anything. The issur of cutting trees could be to cut off fruit that's not ripe yet, then you're being matzah perishvias, so that you shouldn't do. Right, this fruit that's just beginning to grow, it's not edible yet, you shouldn't cut off those branches with fruit on it. To cut a tree like by Shach in a way that it looks like you're pruning it is a problem, so you should cut it back in a way that doesn't look like pruning. Okay? And that's all on one side, not evenly around or whatever. Flowers, there's no issue to pluck up as long as they were flowers that weren't grown to issue or whatever. If they don't have any aroma, then there's no kedusha shviyas with them either. Yeah, what's it called? Since it's not, that's not called ketsira, betsira, right? It's not anything. Not, so we're talking about things that are edible, grains and like that. Not edible, there's no problem. Putting it into water when on Shavuos? Or what should be the problem? No, first of all, if you put flowers into water, they will never grow again. I mean, they don't sprout roots. That's okay. So you can put flowers into a vase. That's no problem. And, put flowers? No, only things that you could sprout, roots. Like potatoes, things like that, you put into water. Beans, sprouts. But not flowers. Once they're cut, that's it. They're finished. There's no limit of Sriya or Katsira.